If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Abraham Lincoln Radio Studio at the George Washington Broadcast Center.
Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
To me and millions of other Iranians who are risking their lives actually within this society, this is a women revolution. This is Iran revolution. Right now, what can survive the Islamic Republic? It's the West. If they don't take action, of course, the Iranian regime will continue killing people.
So she was just getting warmed up. This is an Iranian journalist and activist, but she's an Iranian journalist. It was on Jake Tapper's show on CNN yesterday, bringing up something I'd been wondering about. Where are protests in the United States? Hey, women, you're always standing up for what? Let's hear more from her.
Women are getting killed right now. Men are getting killed right now. And what are these people doing here in America? Send email to your senator, to your representative, and tell them that this is 21st century. I myself, I took to the streets in New York proudly, Women's March, saying, my body, my choice. But it seems that for my fellow sisters in Congress, it's my bodies, it's not my choice in the Middle East, in Iran and Afghanistan.
And she starts calling out people by name on CNN.
I call on Ilhan Omar. AOC, I call on all female congresswomen. We don't need empty words. We need a women's march across the West, because if you don't keep your sisterhood, you don't support women of Iran, women of Afghanistan, our murderers, Islamic terrorists, will get united and they will end feminism, democracy. They will end everything. We're not just fighting for ourselves. We are fighting for dignity and freedom for everyone around the world.
Wow, that's some good stuff.
Yeah, she brought it, and I think she makes a pretty decent argument.
You know, I've talked about this for years, and I'm still noodling it through, but the weird xenophilia that you see among a lot of the American left, where if it's not America, it's great, it's enlightened, it's better. And part of that is they want so much to tear down so many of the institutions and traditions in this country. I think that's just kind of a reflexive. I can't criticize another country without highlighting that the United States does it much, much better.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And I wonder if that's one of the factors at work. I mean, because the abuse of women in Iran is terrible. It's unconscionable. And yet our brave women activists are silent on it. It's interesting.
So I was asking the question yesterday, because I've never quite understood, when they crack down on these protests, these various authoritarian regimes, why they allow as much as they do. So protesters took down the Ayatollah's statue in his hometown in the middle of nowhere, Iran, over the weekend, and smashed it to pieces and chanted death to the Ayatollah. And I thought, I'm surprised they're allowing that to happen. So we got this text regarding Iran. A friend of mine from Iran said they don't crack down too hard on the protesters because it looks so bad to the world. They just photograph everybody in the protests, and when everything calms down, I guess you make the assumption that things will calm down. And they are, you know, they are shooting people and rounding them up and beating them in the streets, but not as much as they could do or might do this weekend or whatever. But so they photograph everybody in the protests, and when everything calms down, they hunt them down and kill them quietly or imprison them quietly to stop, you know, for word to get around that this is what will happen next time. And, you know, most of the time, I'm sure that works. Just every once in a while, you let off a little too much steam and you end up falling. But not very often.
Yeah, it's a loathsome regime, and it always has been a loathsome regime. So, yeah, there's got to be a reason it's been a certain number of years since the last really big protest. And
2009.
I think you just explained it.
2009, the Green Revolution. I thought it was really interesting that Secretary of State Blinken said to Chuck Todd on Meet the Press that it was a mistake for the Obama administration, Joe Biden's old boss. It was a mistake for the Obama administration to not support those protests at the time. The idea from the Obama administration was, well, you don't want to give the regime the opportunity to say it's the West, it's us against the United States. That's
right.
The theory.
It's outside agitators who are causing this, the old saying by dictators.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think actually Secretary Blinken said sometimes you can overthink things. I think that's absolutely right. I think you just support the protesters.
He read my mind. I was just about to say, here we have the twin evils of mankind, not thinking enough and thinking too much. I think that's overthinking it.
Another one that you often hear from the left, even in our country, is anytime you sanction one of these countries, you hear the argument, well, you're just punishing the protesters by hurting their economy. And this woman that was on with Jake Tapper yesterday, she said, have you ever seen a protester in the street complaining about sanctions? Ever? Anywhere in the world, have you ever seen that? Do you see anybody in Iran with, burning American flags because of the sanctions? No. That is a ridiculous argument, she said.
Right.
Sanction the regime. Punish it. They steal all the money anyway. It's not like if you send more money or allow them to have more money, they're giving it to us. Starve the regime of money. I thought that's the first time I've ever heard anybody say that.
Yeah, really, the only time you see what you were talking about is when the regime organizes some phony, up with the regime rally with their loyalists.
Yeah. But that's a very good point, because I've been hearing that my whole life. Well, the problem is when you sanction the country, you're really punishing the people. Nah, she's saying that ain't the case.
You know, she's right. The book that I frequently cite, The Dictator's Handbook, which is so interesting, it mentions that sanctions frequently don't have nearly the effect you hope they will, because the one thing the elites make sure of is they still get theirs.
Yeah, that's clearly true. I mean, I certainly have come to the belief over my adult lifetime that sanctions is just meaningless. I hear somebody talk about that, I'm whatever. How many times have I heard about North Korea being sanctioned or Putin being sanctioned prior to this, where it just didn't seem to do anything?
Yeah, little fathead just got fatter. They haven't heard much from him lately. Robbed a couple of missiles a few weeks ago, but he's off the front page. He's not the hot dictator.
I sure hope this revolution in Iran is successful. Probably won't be, just statistically, based on having watched these throughout the years, or even if you go way, way, way back, whether it's Czechoslovakia in 68 and Hungary in 56 against the Soviet Union, and they just roll in the tanks and crush people, or Tiananmen Square in China, which the whole world thought, wow, this is big, this is happening. And then one night, you know, the next morning you get up and the square is there are no people there, but they're hosing the blood off.
Mm-hmm.
China is asshole.
It might come down to one or two people, honestly. Is the head of the Republican Guard, not the one we droned, he's dead, but the current guy, is he the sort who might think, you know, what's best for my people is I'm going to get together with some of the civilian leadership and say, hey, let's have a power-sharing thing. Let's reform some. If he's of that bent, it could happen. Miracles have happened like that in history.
You know, back to the Soviet Union. They rolled the tanks in, and the people driving the tanks said, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not firing on these people. Mm-hmm. In China, in Tiananmen Square, those soldiers did fire on the people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's got to be a moment-by-moment, which way is the wind blowing decision. You know, those soldiers in Tiananmen Square might have been looking at each other, are you shooting? Because I won't if you won't, but if you do, I will. I mean, it might be like that.
Sure, sure. And, you know, to the extent that the conversation's happening at all in Iran, I don't know that it is, but they might be saying, look, the Revolutionary Guard is part of the power structure of the country in kind of an outsized way. I mean, the military always is, but in terms of domestic politics, the military, the Republican Guard specifically, has an enormous amount of power, which means we get an enormous amount of resources. You are a sergeant in the Revolutionary Guard. You're making, just to throw numbers around, you're making $85,000 a year. If we cease to be in charge of the Treasury, to some extent as we are, you'll be making $55,000 a year. Because that's a more legitimate grade of pay. Mm. It will cost you $30,000 a year per man. And depending on your rank, a lot more. And people think, I don't want to do that. I can barely pay my bills as it is. I'm sticking with the regime.
Wow.
And it can become very, very grubby and not at all about principle.
So our old producer, Sean, made some pretty good coin, at least briefly, trading NFTs. Non-fungible
Tokens.
Mm-hmm. They're pretty hot there for a while. At its peak in September of last year, $17 billion spent. Anyway, the amount of money being spent on NFTs being traded around has tumbled 97% from its high.
So about half. Wow.
The fading NFT, this is from Bloomberg, the fading NFT mania is part of a wider $2 trillion wipeout in the crypto sector as rapidly tightening monetary policy starves speculative assets of investment flows. I've heard smart people say crypto's the future. I mean, this is no matter what, but I don't know. A lot of it seems deadish right now.
Buy the dip! Buy the dip!
You know, crypto is not NFTs, and NFTs are not crypto.
Right.
I understand all the reasons crypto could be, should be a big thing. That doesn't mean it will be.
And all crypto's not the same.
Sure.
Dogecoin Beagletron are not the same as some of the bigger ones that could be around for the rest of our lives.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, the jury's still out on that. It's a fascinating technology and idea, and I love it from a libertarian perspective. But the whole thing just seems, and this is not like an old guy being a Luddite. I've got an uneasy feeling that it can't work.
Well, the NFT thing seemed completely ridiculous from the start.
Yes. And I'm sorry for all the tens of thousands of dollars I plowed into the Happy Ape Yacht Club and the Cheerful Chimp Tennis Camp images I had. And
well, are there people that paid thousands of dollars for the rookie card NFT of whatever NBA player? And
sure, it's now I paid $5,000 for Barry Bonds' 413th home run just because it was a lot less expensive than his 412th.
And they're now worth zero. Because somebody said, yeah, you can get that clip on YouTube anytime you want.
So yeah, but it's not the clip that I have an exclusive right to. I remember you and Sean were browbeating me that there was something wrong with me that I didn't know. And I said, no, forget it.
I never thought it was.
You were Captain NFT, please.
I never thought it made sense. I just don't understand what the difference, though, is between a limited print of a painting and an NFT. And I don't understand why those are so valuable.
And once again, and this will be my last word on the topic because they're now worthless. The copy of a digital image is precisely the same as the original. It's zeros and ones. A perfect copy of the Mona Lisa is not the Mona Lisa. It doesn't have Da Vinci's paint on it.
Which is, but if it looks the same, it's all in your mind then, right?
Until you go to sell it.
Yeah.
But I realize I'm dodging the question.
Yeah. All right. Sorry if you lost money in the NFT market.
I shouldn't have taken out the 401k loan I took out.
You took all your 401k money out. He thought it was worth it at the time. Thought he'd, caught lightning in a bottle.
Bought a bunch of Go-Go Gorilla Boating Club NFTs.
Some financial news, the latest on the hurricane as it's bearing down on Key West, I guess, with 155-mile-an-hour winds, 2 miles an hour short of being a Category 5. I'm not sure you'd notice the difference if you were standing there holding
on. All right, let's call it a 4-plus or something.
Holding on for dear life. More on the way.
Armstrong and Getty. The Armstrong and Getty Show.
We're going to go to a report from Hurricane here in just a second, but a video that you might see flying around today, and I just watched it like it just happened. So President Biden and Joe Biden are speaking there. It looks like the White House talking to people about who knows what. And at the end of it, he just kind of like does that kind of thing where he turns and he doesn't know what direction he's supposed to go. And she says, let's go this way. We need to go this way. And he kind of turns toward her. Then he turns a couple of ways and he takes a couple of steps that direction. I mean, he really looks like a super old person that just, and you got to put him on one of those harnesses like some people do their little kids when you're going through the airport.
Oh, wow.
Come on.
Wow.
So you'll probably see that floating around on social media today and just. But I mean, that's yeah, going to happen to me. My parents are old, but he's president. That's the reason we're commenting on it.
Sure. Yeah. I've seen a handful of those where he turns and says, which way do I go?
Well, it was just the way his wife said, it's this way, honey. We're going to go this way.
Yeah.
Ooh. That's why Putin might use a nuke, because he might think that guy's not in any position to respond. Anyway.
Yikes.
Let's check in on the hurricane, I guess.
Well, this whole community is really bracing for the worst. And those new numbers this morning sunk the pit of the stomach. Everybody here trying to think and fathom what a 17-foot storm surge looks like. But we're on the backside of the storm now, and you can see this is sort of the reverse storm surge. Locals never see this exposed seabed here. We're looking at crab traps and oyster beds blown around in the wind with the rest of us here. But, of course, the water as the storm comes ashore will fill in very fast. And this is just the coming attractions. It's hard to believe that these wind gusts, which are maybe 40, 50 miles an hour, are going to triple in the next couple of hours.
Wow, nice job, crab trap. sounds like an insult.
Shut your crab trap.
I've heard the term storm surge before, and I understand it's like the water comes up on shore more than normal and comes higher than normal, but I just read during the commercial break, I read an explanation of how it happens.
All right.
And now I get it, that report. In the eye of the hurricane, there are enormous downward winds, and they press the water downward, and water doesn't compress, it flows outward. So that energy hits the seafloor and spreads outward, and the water just has to go somewhere. So it goes onto land.
But first, as I was watching a different meteorologist this morning, it sucks up a whole bunch of water underneath it, so it's like traveling along with a whole bunch of extra water for some reason. I don't get that.
No, it doesn't suck it up. It presses it away, which is why he was talking about you could see the crab traps and oyster beds.
Okay.
At least that was my understanding, and it had charts and everything. And
anywho,
I'm pretty good at looking at a chart.
They're talking 16 feet, reminding you that Katrina was a 28-foot surge.
Good Lord.
Yeah. I mean, 16 feet's plenty high.
Tell you what, I don't care who you are. When Ma Nature balls up her fists, you're done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Head for the hills or hide or hunker down or what have you. Yeah.
Apparently, President Biden talked to Ron DeSantis. I've always been amused by this when a crisis hits and all of a sudden politicians go back to being like grown-ups talking about real things. Because, you know, you're calling him Hitler, just, you know, or your people were just
Ron death sentence, but ahead of Kevcare.
Oh, sorry. We have to take a break from saying ridiculous things about each other because we have a hurricane going on. And then they do that for a while. And then they'll go back to saying ridiculous things about each other. It's the way it works. If you miss an hour of the show, get the podcast.
Armstrong and Getty.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
I feel upset. I feel outraged. It makes me feel unsafe. And I'm just disgusted.
Okay.
That is a young person in Virginia, a person who I believe is non-binary, whatever that is, protesting Governor Glenn Youngkin's moves in terms of the state's guidance on transgender student policies. Apparently, there have been walkouts of the plucky youngsters and the teachers and that sort of thing. Which reminds me, I need to get to, maybe tomorrow, the Biden administration's reforms of Title IX. And keep in mind, in the same way that revolutions don't always end up with something better, reform is a funny word. Because it's always used to imply that it's going to be made better. But if I reform a toothbrush into a shiv and stick my cellmate in the carotid artery with it, well, that's not a very good reform, is it? And so we'll get to Title IX tomorrow, but it's outrageous.
Well, you
have the dirty dozen facts about it.
You can reform from a democracy to a dictatorship.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so here's what Glenn Youngkin, the fascist, the monster, decided to do. If adopted by school districts, the policies would require parental sign-off on the use of any name or pronoun other than what's in a student's official record. Which addresses some of the issues we were talking about in hour two of the show, is that right? Yeah. About activists in schools who, if little Johnny decides he wants to be called Jenny, say, now we need to keep the secret from your parents, but you're right, you are a girl. You know, anybody who tells you otherwise is a hater, et cetera, et cetera. It's that whole concept that I've referred to a few times about one of the main goals of this critical theory thing is to separate the kids from the parents. And critical race theory is a big one, but then you get all these white kids. How do you separate them completely from the parents? You instill the radical gender ideology into them, and you keep it secret from the parents till it's so instilled when the parents find out about it and say, whoa, 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 that's uncool. The gulf between them is now too big. So you've got a revolutionary on your hands.
So that's interesting. So that would keep the sophomore girl from telling her science teacher, you need to refer to me as Z now, or they, or whatever pronoun she gets you.
Or whatever.
Yeah. So on one hand, it'd be like informing the parents of what your kids are doing.
Right.
And then on
Since
the other
they
hand,
are children.
And on the other hand, it might just slow down the madness of, geez, if you have half the kids changing their pronouns on a regular basis, how the heck are you going to keep up on that as a teacher?
Yeah, yeah. So the other thing that the monster Youngkin did, and I'm using that term sarcastically, is participation in certain school programming and use of school facilities and sports should be based on a student's biological sex, with modifications offered only to the extent required under federal law. All of that thoroughly, completely reasonable.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
What were we talking about a couple of weeks ago? A thing that I was reading where it said it looks like DeSantis was onto something. There was some national polling around the let's not teach kids about sex before the second grade or whatever it was.
Right.
It was like 80% positive. So
the so-called don't say gay rule is supported by the vast majority of Americans. Would you ever have guessed?
And I think this stuff is probably also going to be controversial. And the vast majority of Americans are going to say, yeah, that's fine with me if he's looking to run for president and win a general election.
If they ever hear the particulars.
True.
There's a reason that law, the Florida law, which was perfectly reasonable, was constantly being called the don't say gay rule, because that would be a very strange rule indeed. But when you get to the particulars, it's thoroughly supportable. So that's why they use the impugning nickname. But all right, here are some of the breathless reactions. Let's start with the 20.
Thousands of students across Virginia walking out of class in solidarity, protesting Virginia Governor Youngkin's new guidelines for trans students. A reversal of Democratic Governor Northam's policy that mandated trans students access to restrooms, changing facilities and school programs that match their gender identity, and require school staff to abide by the students' gender pronouns.
Why don't you go ahead and give us the rest of that report, Michael? Next clip.
Some Virginia parents welcome the new draft policy.
I think if you look at the policy itself, it simply requires that parents be involved in these kind of issues when it comes to their schools.
Ian Pryor is the executive director of Fight for Schools, a group he says advocates for parents' rights.
So to have these broad-based parents have no right to know in any circumstance, you know, that's not only, again, immoral, but it's unconstitutional.
Well, and it's just beyond question that radical ideologies are being taught in public schools in America right now. And the idea that, and by the way, we get to keep all of it secret, is just crazy. Here's one more outraged, plucky youngster. I lost the clips. I can't find them. Which way do I go? Oh, 23.
Many students have supporting parents and they can go home to supportive homes, but there's also students who school is their safe place.
Students should have the right to control their own identity and for that to be respected.
Yeah, but if they have a penis and testicles, they shouldn't be in the girls' locker room.
The first part of that clip, though, that's what I was talking about last week, that they're, and people that lean left seem to always want to craft policy around the tiny minority as opposed to around the majority. That's the whole
right.
Well, some people have horrible parents, so you have to do this. Yeah, but most people don't.
Well, yeah, specifically the one we've heard 1,000 times is because there is one girl in town whose father would beat her for getting pregnant. You have to be able to whisk any 13, 14, 15 year old from their school straight to Planned Parenthood to have an abortion without even talking to the parents.
Right.
So every child is now a ward of the activist teachers instead of the parents because of that one situation.
Yeah.
That is no way to govern a society.
No, I use the example of I hated this is that they your baby is born and shortly thereafter they make you as the father leave the room so they can question mom for a long time about whether or not you're beating her and made her be pregnant or something.
Right.
Yeah, that's a nice little thing to interject into the day for the tiny percentage of the time that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just seems weird.
Well, anyway, so the story in Virginia, you've got a lot of quotes from a lot of outraged children who don't have the barest understanding of the realities, really, that they're talking about. They've just fallen under the sway of these activist teachers. But you're seeing a hell of a lot of support in Virginia. Glenn Youngkin made no secret of what he thought of these things when he was running for governor, and he won. Now, you'd think, judging by the coverage of this in the mainstream media, that, well, yeah, he lost 80 to 20, and that 20% is only lunatic Luddites who hate anybody who's not exactly like them. They're othering everyone, and Glenn Youngkin is a radical maniac. No, he won in purple Virginia. So, you know, my final note on this is take heart, folks. You have way, way more agreement on your side, if you want it, than you would ever guess from, again, the mainstream media.
No doubt.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's one more thing I want to squeeze in, if we can, before the end of the show, which is coming up. The giant Russian disinformation network taken apart by Facebook and what they did and how they did it. I just find it interesting.
Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, who might be running against DeSantis for president, signed a law removing Squaw all across California. Can't have things named Squaw anymore. I don't remember exactly what Squaw means. What's it mean?
It's a derogatory term for a Native American woman. Yeah, I believe that to be true.
Well, if it's
just
true, then
based on reasonable writing I've read.
If that's true, then probably shouldn't have stuff named that. They haven't decided what they're going to do with Squaw Valley, though. That is probably the most famous squaw anything in the country and the world because it was the home of the Olympics in 68.
Top of my head, Armstrong and Getty Valley. I don't know. Do we have to contribute to somebody or bribe somebody? I don't know. Yeah. Do we have to give money to Gavin Newsom's wife's so-called charity? I'm ready to give it.
We will finish strong next.
Armstrong and Getty.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll be right back.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
Scientists recently discovered vaccine-resistant coronavirus in Russian bats. It's what Putin's calling Plan B. Release the bats.
Shimony, that's dark humor right there.
Hot off the presses, Grinnell College poll. I don't know how big a poll that is, how well-respected, but Joe Biden, 36% approval rating. That's on the heels of ABC This Week, which is a highly regarded poll, 39% for his approval rating. So it would seem that after a little brief blip upwards, he's gone back down to where he was before in the 30s.
I said, yeah. You're kidding me.
A respected poll to the extent that any poll is respected these days.
True.
Even pollsters will tell you it's become extremely difficult to be accurate.
Here's something I found out just the other day. So while you were hearing all about the Republicans are going to take back the House and maybe the Senate, pretty clearly, then there was a little brief, you spoke too soon. Democrats are surging. The polls that everybody was using were registered voters as opposed to likely voters. The other polls were all likely voters. So that's that. Always look for that. That's a good way to spin a story if you want to.
Yeah.
It's likely most registered voters, in a midterm, yeah, most registered voters probably don't vote.
Oh, the large majority won't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the point?
Exactly.
Let's ask everybody what they would like at the picnic instead of people who are going to go to the picnic.
There you go, huh?
Come on now.
I want
that's
potato salad.
Homespun wisdom. Me too. Hell yeah. If you're going to have a picnic, four foods. What do you need? What do you go with? I'm going to quibble with my own question. Can hamburgers / hot dogs be one thing?
I guess I want them both.
I had hot dogs on the grill last night, and I was talking to the kids about why are these so good? Why are they so much better than if we cook them in the pan? Or my mom used to boil them. And I was talking about how you ate more boiled food in the Midwest in the winter because just not a lot of grilling outside.
Right, right. You cut a dog in half and do it in the pan. It's pretty good.
But, man, there's something that happens with the flame on a grill that makes a hot dog just, oh, so
yeah.
Good.
All right, so we've agreed. Hot dogs, potato salad.
I need coleslaw.
I would like some coleslaw.
Mm. Some beans would be pretty good, too.
Oh, my God.
You got some good baked beans?
Oh, please.
God, I'd eat that right now. I want somebody's grandma to bring me those four things right now.
Well, you didn't leave room for apple pie, though.
Ah!
Because we got to have a little something-something at the end of the meal, huh?
Yeah, and then if you say you already had your four things, I'm going to pull out my baby knife and stick you with it and eat your pie.
Wow, this turned violent. I found this interesting. A sprawling disinformation network originated in Russia sought to use hundreds of fake social media accounts and dozens of sham news websites to spread Kremlin talking points about the invasion of Ukraine, according to Meta, which is the parent company of Facebook. Full disclosure, I often call them evil. But I think they're telling the truth in this case. They said they identified and disabled the operation before it was able to gain a larger audience. But Facebook said it was the largest, most complex Russian propaganda effort that it's found since the invasion began. Here's what it looked like. And here's why it's so insidious. The operation involved more than 60 websites created to mimic legitimate news sites, including the Guardian newspaper in the UK and Germany's Der Spiegel. Instead of the actual news reported by those outlets, however, the fake sites, which look just the same as the real sites, contained links to Russian propaganda and disinformation about Ukraine. Then more than 1,600 Facebook accounts were used to spread the propaganda to audiences in Germany, Italy, France, the UK, and Ukraine. I mean, for instance, video false staging in Bucha revealed. Remember, that was the Ukrainian town where hundreds were slaughtered and put in mass graves and the rest of it. So, you know, you're in Britain and the Guardian UK is saying, hey, it was staged. It's false. If you clicked on this link that looked like it's the Guardian and you think, wow, that's a reasonably legit site. Turns out the Ruskies didn't do it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Let's see. The fake social media accounts were then used to spread links to the fake news stories and other pro-Russian posts and videos on Facebook and Instagram, as well as Telegram and Twitter. The network was active throughout the summer, said Meta's director of threat disruption. That's kind of a cool title. That's a very cool title. I'm the director of threat disruption. Now get down! Get down! Get to the chopper now!
Or heads up!
Right. On a few occasions, the operation's content was amplified by the official Facebook pages of Russian embassies in Europe and Asia. I think this is probably the largest, most complex Russian origin operation that we've disrupted since the beginning of the war in Ukraine earlier this year. The network's activities first noticed by investigative reporters in Germany. Was is up with this? When Meta began its investigation, found many of the fake accounts had already been removed by Facebook's automated systems, but dozens of others remained. Interesting. And they note the fact that the Russian embassies were directly involved in this is a real moment. They used some sophisticated tactics, including the use of multiple languages and carefully constructed imposter websites. Dirty Ruskies. What are you going to do? Don't turn your back on them.
Oh, we are? We're out of time? Oh, darn it. We'll have to do it tomorrow.
What?
I was going to play a clip from a former CIA guy again about whether or not Putin will use nukes and everything. That has there been a moment in world history where one person was on the verge of changing the direction of things as much as now? Maybe Khrushchev in 62, but that'd be the only comparison I can think of. What is Putin gonna do with the world's largest nuclear arsenal? I don't know.
To quote the great Sting, I hope the Russians love their children too.
Right.
Final thoughts! Yes!
With your hosts, Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty.
Here's your host for Final Thoughts, Joe Getty.
Was that the guy on the airplane intercom system the other day? Hey, let's get a final thought from everybody on the crew. Michelangelo is our technical director, pressing the buttons. Michael, lead us off.
I'm going to bring back a memory, guys. You were a kid. It was recess. You would come back to the classroom, and the teacher had set up the film projector, and the white screen had been set up, and she turned out the lights. She watched the film, and then some kid would do shadow puppets, of course. Those were good days for me.
Yep.
Yeah, here. Good times. Young Alex is our behind-the-scenes producer. Alex, final thought?
Yeah, I'm working on my football predictions for this week, and I'll have them up for you tomorrow. But I've gotten a lot of great responses, including one gentleman by the name of Brian, says, I look forward to them every week. So thank you, Brian. I'll have them up for you tomorrow.
Cool.
As a fellow Niners fan, what letter grade would you give their efforts so far this year?
What's lower than F?
Oh, wow. Jack, a final thought for us.
Joe mentioned a Sting song from the 80s. Yes, there was a song, I Hope the Russians Love Their Children Too. And that was a hit song, and that was at a time when we were significantly less likely to end up in a nuclear confrontation than we are today, I think.
My final thought, a couple more Sting quotes. Roxanne, you don't have to put out the red light, and da-do-do-do-da-da-da.
My favorite, which I implement every day, please don't stand so close to me.
Oh, boy.
That's really kind of my life's motto.
So, oh, boy. Yeah, I can't even contemplate if he uses nukes. What the hell? I mean, that changes pretty much every conversation you're going to have for the next 10 years of your life.
I guarantee you there's a lot of important people in our government and other allies discussing that right now.
Good Lord.
Armstrong and Getty wrapping up another grueling four-hour workday.
So many people who think so little time, go to armstrongandgetty.com. We have a lot of great hot links for you. Click on the hot links, check them out, then drop us an email, mailbag@armstrongandgetty.com. You can get the podcast at the website or link to them anyway. And some great A&G swag, too. Really helps to keep the guys on the payroll. Get yourself a t-shirt.
And we'll try to stay up on all the big news stories and have the latest for you tomorrow. God bless America.
Armstrong and Getty.
Listen up, Jack Wagon.
Hear me plainly. Phenomenal. You
resist we much.
Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie?
No, and then no, and then no, 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 and then no.
Thank you.
So let's go out with a bang.
Oh.
On that high note, thank you all very much.
Armstrong and Getty.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money in markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.